The Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton, and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Welcome to the Rush Hour. Gus, Jude, and Wendell. Follow us on TikTok and Instagram at Rush Hour. Triple M is our handle. How are you, Jude?
Mate, great to be here. Excited for the show, mate.
How are you, Wendell? You seem up and about today.
I'm feeling great. I have had plenty of sleep, and I am ready to rock and roll today, boys.
Let's look out. It's going to be a massive show. Cran from Spiderbait's going to come on. We're going to talk to Joe Rogan as well. Unbelievable get. And we're going to talk all things Bulldogs, as well as Swanee Dane Rampey. He's going to come on. He's got his 200th game on the weekend, so he's going to be on the show. But what about this, boy? Something has come across my desk. Driver Jo Coombs discovered that her Land Rover Discovery was missing from the car park across the road from her flat.
Yep.
So she goes, okay, I've got this insurance company app, and on the insurance company app, I can actually find out where it is GPS-wise. Finds out that it's only 3.5 kilometres away from her home.
Wow.
Rings the coppers up and says, look, my car's been stolen. It's 3.5 k's away. And they said, you know what? We're super busy at the moment. So if you've still got your keys, why don't you just go and get it? And she's like, well, you know, what if I stumble across the people that have stolen? And they go, well, we can help you, but we can't help you now because we've got other emergencies because it's only a car, right?
She goes,
okay. She goes,
do you take your own back up there?
No, she decides to back herself. So she goes over there in an Uber, sees her car. She's got her keys. She goes, beep, beep, opens the doors, drives off. That's it. She stole the car back.
That's incredible.
Jo Coombs, you're a hero of this show.
Well, that's so good. I just want to know, if you're going to steal a car, you're 3.5 k's away. Don't you think at some stage, like, you're thinking the person whose car you stole, they're going to, oh, mate, I just can't believe that. But
if you're stealing a car, take it further away.
Yes.
It reminds me of my father-in-law, Pete Carroll. He's a legend. He grew up in Balmain when he always says Balmain was tough back then.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, the tough days. And he goes, you'd get your TV stolen out of your flat or your apartment, and then you'd be able to go down to the local pub and buy it back in about an hour later down at either the dry dock or one of those as well. So you could just get same bloke. He'd probably headbutt you later on, but it's all good.
It's all right. Everyone knows. It's all part of the village. It's all part of the setup.
Remember those little Suzuki sort of Swifts, the ute ones that you...
The top off.
No, the ones with the ute style. Have you ever seen those?
No, I don't think so.
So back up in Serena, a mate of mine, we're like 15, 16, and his dad goes to sleep and goes, mate, let's take it for a joyride.
Oh, no.
And I was going, and it was a bit wet. And then I was going, no, we can't. And then he goes, come on. I said, this will trick you. I wasn't hard to get in. I said, rightio. So we were going. Next minute, he turns around the corner. It rolls on its side.
Oh.
Mate, I go to jump and run. He goes, what are you doing? Let's lift it up. So we lifted it up, drove it home. So we went to sleep. In the morning, we get this... Boys, did you go for a drive in the morning last Friday? Oh, mate, I was so embarrassed. But it was one of those little ones that you can just lift straight back up.
Yeah, little Suzuki Sierras. I know what you mean. You know, the Italian version of the Tour de France is called the
Giro d'Italia.
Yeah, Giro d'Italia, mate.
Well, the winner of that nearly lost his eye in the celebration.
What?
Yeah, so you know, they get there and they normally have a couple of pretty ladies next to them, and they go over and give them a kiss on each cheek.
Yeah.
They still do that?
Oh, they still do that,
They need to get rid of that. I mean, we need to move with the times.
That could be true, but Italy and France, they love all that sort of stuff, and, you know, they're perhaps a little bit behind. Mm. So anyway, that's all happening, and then they go in, give them a bottle of champagne, a bit like the Formula One guys, bit of a shake-up, and then bang, the cork straight in the bloke's eye. He goes down, falls off the thingy bob, doctors come, 15 minutes work on him there, people are clapping, not quite knowing what to do, they realise that it's worse than they think, and they take him off to hospital. So he doesn't have the opportunity to have the press and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which reminded me of my cousin, Chris Chapman, who's an absolute champion, down the end of the table at Christmas, and we're talking a table of about 20.
Yep.
So you imagine everyone, you know, 20 people in length. Anyway, my other cousin, Cam, just goes, he goes, boop.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes, right? And it's in slow motion. This thing is flying over 5 people, 10 people, 15, 20 people. And he's sitting there, not oblivious to the whole thing, at the end of the table, wearing sunnies, thank God, wearing some Ray-Bans, bang. And it knocks out the
lens.
The lens in the sunnies. And it sort of startles him, but that probably saved his eye.
His eye, it did.
Wow. Yeah.
So they're the type of injuries that can happen when you're not even sort of expecting it. We know you go to plenty of parties.
Yeah. There's so many different parties that you can, I did my elbow one day and it was a bit slippery on the floor in one of these pubs. It was a big party we were having for some reason I was doing break dancing.
Oh, of course. What do you mean for some reason?
Yeah.
You love to break dance.
For some reason. But I did this ridiculous move where, but then as I went to get up, I slipped on the floor and landed on my elbow, and I end up getting like, it started swelling so much that it must have messed up the bursa because I got bursitis. It looked like I had a little dinner roll under my skin on my elbow.
Ow.
And I had to drain it. It was the worst. It was
you got
so
the worst
bad.
Injury from breakdancing, not playing 330 games of AFL.
Exactly.
Give us a call right now, 1-333-53. What are your party injuries? Leon from Camden. G'day, Leon.
G'day, boys. How you going?
Good, Leon.
How did you injure yourself at a party?
Oh, mate, I was just out on the night out with one of my mates just down the riverbanks there at Pitt Town and having a bit of a rumble, as you do, and had a Corona bottle in my hand and, it's fallen onto the ground and I've stepped back onto it and it's just ripped the whole ball of my foot open.
Oh.
And, it was a pretty nasty one. So, anyway, my mate's mother's rushed us into the hospital and as we're sitting there on the hospital bed, my mate sort of watching this doctor, he looked like he was just sort of learning and he was trying to put the local into my foot so that they could stitch it all up.
Yeah.
And sort of tapping him on the shoulder saying, mate, the needle of the anesthetic is going straight through the webbing of his toes and squirting back up onto my leg.
Oh,
it actually, no. And he told him that about three times and he missed it. And anyway, they ended up stitching my foot up with no local in it. It was one of the most painful experiences.
Good story, Leon. Thank you very much, mate. Glad you're okay now. Gaylene from Kingswood. G'day, Gaylene.
Hello, how are you, boys?
Good. How did you get injured at the party?
Well, unbelievable. I was at my friend's christening for her daughter, and my son was a similar age, and I was sitting on the bar stool at their house, and you know how you put your legs down into the bar stool, like underneath it?
Yeah.
Don't ever do that. So anyway, sitting there, and next minute, my dress made me slide off the bar stool, legs intact, and now I have a permanent scar in indentation in my right leg. 18 years later, it's still there. So please, everyone, do not do it.
Yeah. Good on you.
Public service announcement. Yeah.
Thank you, Gaylene. We appreciate it. What about Jodie and Lawson? Hi, Jodie. How are you this afternoon?
Mate, Gus, I'm really well. How are you?
Yeah, good, very Jay. Well. How did you hurt yourself at the party?
Okay, so I was at a 21st birthday back in the day, and it was really cold, so I'm standing trying to warm my posterior on the fire. Next thing, this bloke dive tackles me, and I thought, what's going on? So I started punching on with him, but my skirt had caught fire, and he was trying to put me out.
Oh, and did he do it, Jodie? Were you okay?
I was okay, mate. He put the fire out, but not before I got a few in, I can tell you, because I didn't know what was going on.
Nicely done, Jodie. Not messing with you. What about Richard and Nelson Bay to finish it off? And remember, we have Cram waiting on the line from Spider Bait. So what's your language, Richard? Carry on.
Yeah, I went to a party. We were playing darts, and then we decided we'd take it outside and play catch the dart. I got the dart. I got the dart in the eye, and I had to wear an eye patch to school for about 6 months, and it was pink, and everybody ribbed me about it, teased me the whole lot. But then later on in life, I had to have a cataract done due to the fact that the dart caused damage in the eye.
Yeah.
And now it's like seeing Pink Floyd, the album with the prism on it, the wall.
Yeah.
Every time I walk underneath a downlight in a supermarket, I get a flash of a rainbow effect coming out of my eye.
Oh, you poor thing, Rich.
Who thought it was a good idea to play catch the dart, though, Richard?
That was me.
Oh, yeah. Good on you, Richard. Goodness. And all the callers we couldn't get to as well.
You know what? It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
That's exactly right. Coming up next, we also talk to the legend Cram from Spider Bait.
This is the Triple M Rush Hour. The Rush Hour. For over 30 years, our next guest has been electrifying audiences with some of Aussie rock's most iconic riffs. His band's got two arias out of the seven albums they've released, and he possesses the ability to drum, sing, and do sick burnouts in a wicked dodge in the Black Betty film clip at the same time. They're about to drop their eighth album, Songs in the Key of J. Please welcome, from Spider Bait, Cram.
Prem, thanks for joining us on the Rush Hour. Sensational to talk to you. How you been?
Good, man. That's great. Awesome, dude.
Mate, just such a big tour. The tour in the Key of J. Tell us a bit about what people are going to see.
Yeah, so the tour in the Key of J is basically in support of, we've just released a double album of, which is called Sounds in the Key of J, and the Key of J is the key of Janet. So it's all about Janet's legacy in Spider Bait, all of her incredible songs over the years. It's kind of like the double album is a collection of all of her work. And it was my idea because she's very reluctant in the limelight. So this is the last thing that she would ever want to do herself and say, hey, let's do a record of just all my stuff because I'm so unreal. You know, it's not like that at all. It was more like me and Wit just wanting to pay tribute to her. I guess we're a weird band because we have two singers. I mean, there's so many people love Black Betty, but just as many people love Calypso, you know, for instance. And we just did Groove in the Mood. I just want to say to especially to any of the fans listening who came to our show in Maitland out there in New South Wales, how epic it was. Like 20,000 people just blew us away. So thanks to all you guys. And it was just as many people going nuts, probably even more going nuts for Calypso than any other song. So this show is essentially about Janet's work. And so it's going to be a different type of Spider-Bait show for us that's just celebrating her legacy and I guess in the history of Australian music, you know.
Graham, it's Wendell Sale here, mate. How you going, my friend?
Hi, mate.
Mate, one thing I've noticed, the last couple of years has been tough for a lot of people, but also because, you know, Jude, myself and that, we love our music. Live music has been decimated and, you know, the artist, and we've seen it time and time again. But now, you know, everyone's getting back. Whenever I go to the local pub or I go, I need an excuse to get there, but I always appreciate live music. It has been tough, hasn't it, mate?
Yeah, man. And look, it's great. There's so many people. I don't think a lot of people realise there's, you know, like footy players like you guys and other people, like, I know, actors, different people in the media, just all different types of people in the limelight are just massive music fans. Like you'd be just as big a music fans if you guys weren't, you know, famous cats or not. You'd just be down there seeing gigs, playing records. You'd have that something about music does something to people. And I think from the perspective of the musicians like myself, but just as much for all the tech people that worked in the industry that suddenly just had no job, it just created a massive hole in the psyche of Australia and Australian culture. And it's just like so moving, like I've just in reference to Groove in the Moo just recently, just the joy and the excitement of people to be able to get out and see bands again and not have to wear a mask and not, you know, obviously COVID's still around, we're still worried about it, but just the need to connect with on a musical level with each other as well as the musicians, and from the musicians' point of view we feel exactly the same. So thanks, I really appreciate you saying that, Wendell. Thanks heaps, brother.
Cram, as you know, this year is the 30th anniversary of the first Big Day Out festival. What was it like to play in front of so many people?
Well, I think the two biggest shows I've ever played were both 60,000 people. One was when we supported Guns N' Roses at the Sydney Stadium, which was nuts. And Axel was really sweet to us, and he let me use all his walkways and stuff. So I did a full Freddie Mercury during Black Betty at that gig. Man, I got 60,000 people singing along. It was epic. It was great. And they were cool. Let us do that, you know. And then the other one was at the Sydney Big Day Out when it first moved out to Homebush. It was the early days, I think, for us. So I'm much better at it now. But when you have a crowd that big, you almost have to approach it as one huge party animal. You know, it's like then, and you just got to accept that you can't communicate with everyone at the back unless you actually call out, hey, how you doing out the back? And then they go, hey, you know. So looking at footage of that gig now, I just feel like a little speck. Nice. And the other thing about that gig was, I don't know what happened, but I was stupid enough to jump into the mosh pit. And I used to do crazy shit back then, man. Like I'd break ribs and stuff. And so I jumped in there and then I was like, oh, this is like, I feel like, you know, when Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he falls into the snake
pit. The snake
pit,
yes.
And he goes, oh, and that's what it was like. I was like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. The sweat and the toil. And I'm like, how, this is intense. And full respect to the hardcore mosh pit people of the 90s, if you're still around, you know, love you heaps.
Cram, it's been so good to chat to you, and we wish you all the best for the national tour in the Key of J, and just so good to just chat to an iconic Aussie and from an iconic band. So we wish Spider-Bait all the best.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Let's talk about rugby league. Let's talk about the Bulldogs for a moment. Gus Gould has spoken out about Barrett's exit from the club, and here's Gus's side of the story. This is on his podcast, Six Tackles.
Yeah, look, it's results-based, particularly with the fan base, and that put a lot of pressure on Trent. and you could see that he was sort of feeling it. I think the disappointment of losing that game last Friday night took its toll after the game. There was a report came out on Sunday afternoon that the board was meeting to discuss the coach's future, which was, you know, a rather embellished explanation of exactly what was happening with that meeting, because it was a subcommittee of the board. As I say, I don't believe at any time that Trent being sacked was on the table. I don't think that was ever going to be a solution. But then Sunday night, something must have happened Sunday afternoon, and 6 o'clock, right on the dot, I got a phone call from his manager, Wayne Beavis, who said that he was going to pull the pin.
I reckon the most important words there was something happened on Sunday
something
afternoon.
Something happened.
Do we buy this version of events, Del?
Look, it's one of those. I don't. I think, you know, obviously the writing was on the wall there. Gus said a couple of weeks ago that Trent Barrett will be there longer than he will be.
Full support of the board is one of the worst things you can hear.
Yeah, once you hear that, you know, mate, just get into the plank, mate. You're about to go. And then obviously, you know, the pressure's obviously gotten to Trent. You know, Newcastle aren't playing that well at the moment, 16-6. And, you know, that weekend, they needed that win, the Dogs. You know, I know they beat the Roosters and they've had one or two wins.
No need to go there, no, is there?
But, mate, I'm disappointed. But, look, I'm not saying that. There's not a lot of truth to what Gus is saying, but I'm just saying there's
something's been left out. Yeah. What about Mick Potter, who's been announced as the interim coach? What can we expect from him? If people don't know, he coached the West Tigers back in 2013 and 14 with a 35% winning record. He coached the St. Helens to a grand final in 2009, losing to Leeds. Obviously a wonderful football player in his own right. What do you reckon, mate? Do you reckon he's just for this year and they're going to get themselves someone different for 2023 and onwards?
Look, I like Mick Potter. You know, when he left West Tigers, it wasn't in great circumstances. I think he went head-to-head with Benji Marshall and Robbie Farah, which they were two of the biggest, you know, powerful identities at the Tigers at the time. Look, mate, hopefully Mick does well. You know, I think he's been involved with Fiji and that. I think Fiji Rugby League and that. And I know Mick Potter quite well. Good coach. Obviously, was a pretty fair player. I think he won 2 Dally M's back in the day. But this is, once again, I think they'll go in a new direction. I don't think he's going to be their long-term coach. I think they want Seraldo and maybe Shane Flanagan are in the mix. But I don't know if Mick Potter's going to be into long-term. Would I like to see him in that position long-term? It depends how he goes with these players, because it's going to be a tough one.
Hmm. How does Mick and also the other wider Canterbury Bulldogs power brokers, how do they stop the rot in this little next period?
Mate, you've got to start having players be accountable for the way they're playing and consistency. You know, last couple of years, my two teams, the Dragons and Bulldogs, they haven't been great. So I know as a fan and as an ex-player, I've been disappointed. When the Bulldogs, the culture of that club is just, it's gone away from what it was. You know, you talk about the Dogs of War, you talk about the Bulldogs juniors. There's none of that at the moment.
Well, let me stop you there, because James Graham would know better than anyone. This is what he said on NRL 360.
You know, all this talk around, I signed for Trent. You know, I wanted to play for Barrett. Now Barrett's gone, like, players putting their hands up saying he was the reason. That's just bollocks. Mm. Just how about play for him then? Mm. If you're so concerned about playing for Trent Barrett or signing because of him, show us on the field. Mm. Simple solution. You knew he was under pressure weeks and weeks ago, months ago. Shirt on the field.
I love James Graham. Mate, he's been wonderful for Triple M Rugby League, and, you know, he speaks a lot of sense, doesn't he, Jude?
Oh, absolutely. I love how he just calls it as it is, and that's so true. I mean, you talk about playing for a coach and things like that, but also having the self-respect in your own performance, you know? Like, you sit there and go, how do I want to represent myself? But also, if you've signed for a particular coach, you know he's under fire. You go out and you defend that by playing well.
And also, look, I think, you know, James Graham, I like how he speaks. He's straight to the point. He doesn't sit on the fence. And as a forward, he changed the game. The way the front row has played, he changed the game. And I listened to him on at luncheon up there in Brisbane. And the respect that he had in the room, but also Wayne Bennett was there, very articulate. For a bloke that, you know, mate, he talked about that time with Sam Burgess. So when he talks, people listen now. And, mate, I really enjoy what he's saying. It's right. All those blokes, if you signed to play for Trent Barrett, mate, you didn't show it. Mm. But also, I think Trent Barrett's got to think now. Look, am I just if I stay in rugby league, am I just going to be a backs coach or second in charge? Because If you have a
there's nothing wrong with that. Being an assistant coach in a good setup is fantastic.
Absolutely. You can build the rapport with the players, have your impact play on all the strategy and things like that.
Yeah, I reckon that could be the go for him. According to James Hooper, Barrett was at a wake when he saw the news and stuff. So it all does sound a little bit how you're going to me. Anyway, the rush hour. Gus, Jude and Wendell to finish up the first hour. We're about to speak to Joe Rogan. It's a big second hour coming up.
We're not speaking to him, mate.
What do you mean?
We're not speaking to him.
We've got a little clip.
Yeah.
We've got a clip from his podcast.
Joe Rogan is on our show.
I'm about to play something. You've been given the bumps to you.
Yeah.
So he's not on the line?
No.
No, he's not.
Okay. So do you want me to set it up for you?
Yes, please, mate.
Okay. So basically, Joe Rogan's got a huge platform.
Hold on a second. Who's producing this show today? Charlie.
Charlie White, yes.
Well, Charlie, give yourself an uppercut. He said we had Josh Rogan on the
Josh.
We might be able to get a Josh Rogan. We probably track him down.
Carry on.
So Joe Rogan obviously has a massive platform on Spotify. Yeah, gets paid $200 million deal.
$200 million
for exclusive rights. Yeah, absolutely. 11 million downloads per episode. But
wow,
he delved into New South Wales the other day, and it just bobbed up. And he's obviously made an unfortunate gaffe on a recent episode with guest host Hotep Jesus, claiming a law is being passed to stop Australians from growing food themselves. Let's have a listen.
I want to find out what this is, but I read something briefly and I didn't get into the article. But they were saying that they were trying to pass a bill that would outlaw you growing your own food in Australia.
Oh, my God.
Did you find anything?
Nothing's coming up. The closest thing I could find was something like this.
It's not New Zealand. It's in Australia.
I know, but this is close.
New Zealand is like right around the corner.
Could have.
It's got to be a real thing. Mm. It seems too good to not be. It better not be fake. It might be fake.
But even if it's fake, right? Like the fake is usually the warning.
And they have 11 million people listen to these episodes. It's got to be a real thing. Joe Rogan said, and New Zealand and Australia just around the corner.
Yeah.
They're embarrassing Americans. They're embarrassing how they don't know where things are and what's going on. As if Australia doesn't grow its own food, mate. Have a look at your own country.
Mate, honestly.
what an absolute.
There's a lot of arrogance to Americans.
I love when they start searching for the article and they actually can't find it and they're going, oh, surely it's there.
It's not fake, is it? Yes, it is fake, mate. We have got some of the greatest produce of fresh food in the world.
You can have your veggie patch in the backyard if you want. You can do anything. It's okay.
See how big our country is, mate. Why wouldn't we be growing our own vegetables and stuff, honestly?
Joe Rogan,
mate.
11 million people download his stuff every single podcast?
Yeah, I don't know how many of those Josh Rogans that you know as well.
I prefer we got on Josh now.
Actually, I'm thinking you were thinking of Rogan Josh. Up next, Gus, you're cranky about something. Mm. Surprise, surprise.
Gus, Jude and Wendell, this is the Triple M Rush Hour.
But boys, you know how much guys like to get advice, especially around their driving?
Yes.
Says no one.
Yes.
But I'm going to give you some advice now to Sydney drivers, right?
Yeah, here we go.
Please put your lights on in bad weather or when it's near dark. Don't wait until it's dark to whack on your lights. You know the most safest car out there is the Volvo, right?
Yes.
When you turn on the Volvo, the lights come on. There's a reason for that because you can be seen. So anyone out there right now, it's about 5 o'clock, whack your lights on.
Yep.
Do that for us. It's going to help everyone out. What about the use of the indicator? When you move from one lane to another, there's a little thing near your steering wheel where you can go click and it'll show the people behind you and in front of you that you're moving to the left or the right. Any danger of using your indicator? These are all Sydney drivers' tips. The merging rule.
Yep.
So two lanes going into one lane. Let's say the left-hand lane is merging into the right-hand lane.
Yeah.
The car in the left-hand lane, the furthest one, you go to the end of the left lane and go in, one car out.
Yep.
You don't start merging 100 metres before the end of the left lane.
Yes.
Like a zipper. It just should fold in nicely. Just keep driving forward. We'll make it work.
Correct. If you stop 100 metres out, then everyone has to stop. People have to go around you and you're a dickhead. Yep. So don't. Absolutely fired up here. What about, and this is the last point, right?
Yeah.
If someone lets you in, just thank them.
Acknowledgement.
Just let them know. You don't necessarily have to put the window down and put your hand out, which is what I do.
No.
Even in bad weather.
That's illegal.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Okay. You get fined for that.
But just over your left shoulder, stick your hand up so you can see it. And thank you very much for letting me in.
Or you hit your hazards for 1 or 2 seconds. People know, like, bang.
That's a nice touch as well, because truckies do that. I totally understand that. So just where is the kindness on the road? Where is the acknowledgement that you're not the only one out there and there's a lot of other people that might not quite know where you're going? See you and stuff. This has happened over the last week and I've just been telling them up. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to let everyone know.
Yeah.
Love it, mate. Okay. Love it. Love when you get fired up.
I just want you to settle down, take a breath. Otherwise, I'll walk you out of the studio for a little while.
I don't want that. He ran at me in the break and smashed my shoulder. Anyway, you got stuck, big fella, up in Magic Round.
Yeah, mate, I can't believe
what happened?
Mate, it's just, you know, after the game, we're on the fifth level and you go down and then all of us got in the lift.
Oh, this was at Suncorp?
Suncorp Stadium.
Okay.
And, mate, we're all ready to sort of go home, you know, and all of a sudden we get in the lift and it just stops. Jake Duke. Channel 9, or is he Fox?
He's Fox now.
Yeah, he's Fox. Sorry. And then Todd Levinsky, you know, Danica Mason's partner. For the first 3 to 5 minutes, I thought it was funny, and I was mucking around. I was jumping up and down like a big kid.
You jumping? That makes it
worse. I
know, but I didn't think it was going to be this long because I just thought it was funny, and I'm like a big kid.
Yeah.
And then I was going, mate, we're stuck here, and it was like a full lift. It was like a full lift, and mate, Jake Duke was he was calling out and saying, "Hey guys, we're stuck in here." Yep. We've made a call. Just chill out. Mate, all of a sudden I'm going, this is real. And I started like freaking out a little bit.
Claustrophobia.
Yeah, because I think, me and MG and I hate tight spaces.
MG hates getting in lifts at the best of times and loves his space.
He's a caged animal though. This guy, I couldn't spend 5 minutes.
Well, the big panther is as well. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, Todd, after 5 minutes, 6 minutes, I'm like starting to really sort of like, bit of anxiety, and then he goes, mate, just breathe. So he's talking me through breathing in there because obviously, you know, he's a trainer, he does all that stuff and that. I'm going, and then when we got out, I was like, yeah, we're out here.
But how long were you in there for?
I reckon 10 to 12 minutes.
You're doing the breathing. Are you holding hands?
No, but he's just going, mate, just breathe.
In 3 nose, out 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was because I started getting like real bad anxiety, mate. Yeah.
Let's do it now.
Yeah.
5 seconds in and then. 5 seconds out.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Freddie Fittler talks. You do that every morning for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Collective
win
breath.
The morning, win the day. Give us a call on 1-333-53. Mick Lumpty Lumpton, who's a mate of mine. We rang him.
Mick Lumpton.
He was actually locked in the pub in Penrith once by the police because there was a shooting across the road. He's walking along and they said, get in the pub and stay there.
Oh,
6 hours.
If I do.
6 hours, the big fella. We phoned him up on Moon Man in the morning show.
Is that what he told his wife?
Absolutely fantastic, yeah. Let's, I think Lumpy might be on the line now, might be even be able to talk us through. G'day, Lumpy, how are you, mate?
How are we, buddy?
Good on you, mate. Sorry, mate, you were texting me. I thought that you couldn't get through, so tell us the story.
I tried ringing again and I got through, which is great. How are we, boys? All good?
Good, mate. So what happened that night?
So that night, remember the guy was in High Street and he shot up St. Mary's Police Station.
Oh, yeah.
And then he came around, and then he shot at Penrith Police Station, and the police come out and obviously shot him fatally, but they thought there was two shooters because he got out of one side of the car and went around the other side of the car and got the gun out and left two doors open.
Ah.
So as we walked up the street, the police came back down the street and said, "Get in," and so they've actually physically locked the pub.
But bars so, open? Well, bars open though, Lumpy?
Bars open, and I did empty it of some supplies.
The best type of lock-ins.
Not all heroes wear capes, Lumpy. Thanks for the call, mate. What about Jenny on the Central Coast? G'day, Jen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Where did you get stuck?
In the bathroom.
Okay, what happened?
It was back when my daughter was little. She was about 3 months old, and I'd fed her and put her back to bed, so I thought I'll go have a shower. After my shower, I went to walk out the bathroom and the doorknob broke off in my hand.
Oh.
So there wasn't a lot I could do back in the days before mobile phones or anything like that. So all I had was a threadbare nightie. I threw that on, window, took out the fly screen, climbed out the window, wrapped a towel around my waist and ran 3 doors up to my girlfriend's house before she went to work to bring my husband to come home and unlock the house for me.
Good on you.
In the nighty.
Good on you, Jen. Love your work. Let's go to Matt and Maroubra. G'day, Matty.
Hello, boys. How are you?
Good, mate. Where'd you get stuck?
I got stuck in a phone booth. You remember the old sort of...
Superman.
You know, the old sort of telecom phone booth, and they had the door that sort of rotated on an angle open?
Yeah.
I'd been out with the boys, and I'd had a skin full, and I rang my girlfriend at the time because she was going to come and collect me, and I just couldn't work out how to open the door. And she's turned up, and she's in the car sort of motioning me for her to come out, and I was trying to let her know I couldn't. And... it turned into a bit of a mess because she got out. She's trying to open the door, but I kept sort of blocking the door from opening. So I was in there for a good probably 20, 25 minutes, and needless to say, by the end of it, she wasn't too happy, you know, because, and I was glad the day they got rid of those phone booths.
Good on you, mate.
Doctor Who in the TARDIS.
Yeah, you're right.
You made us laugh. Good on you, mate. Let's go to Patrick now in North Entrance. G'day, Paddy.
G'day, how you going?
Good, thanks. Where'd you get stuck?
Oh, I got stuck in a pig trap out hunting.
Oh, that's got to hurt,
isn't
it?
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a cage, so it doesn't actually, you know, hurt. But I was pulling an old carcass out, and as it shut behind me, I was hugging this carcass at point blank range for 8 hours.
Oh, no. 8 hours?
Yeah, covered in maggots, covered in just rotted flesh, you know, absolutely putrid, and you wouldn't want to go anywhere near it. And I was just spooning it for 8 hours.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Who came and got you, Paddy?
Hey?
Who came and got you?
Some other guys in the morning eventually.
Yeah.
Some guys, that track's a fairly well-known track out in Baraba, and some guys shoved me in the morning, and I was thinking, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, that's a different way of breaking back mountain, I suppose.
What are you doing with that carcass out there?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. Thanks, Paddy. Let's talk about the NRL. Anthony Mundine, he's thrown his hat into the ring to coach the Bulldogs. Speaking to Channel 7 News, this is what the man said.
The man's the man. I know the game. I've been playing since I was 4. Obviously, it's the place out of origin and whatnot. Should have played it for Australia. That's another story. It's mindset. And that's something I do bring, is mindset. Get along with Gus, he's all good. You know what I mean? I gave him nightmares in the 90s, but if he doesn't hold that against me, it's all good. Rub a bit of Mundine flavour into the Guild flavour, and we got a championship team.
Can you see that happening, Del?
Look, I don't know about coaching, but I can see him like sort of coming on board as an ambassador or a sort of
consultant.
But you can get a bloke like him. I had an ambassador all the Dragons where Wayne slot me going in working with the younger players and stuff. He's a bloke that might bring him some ideas, but I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure that's probably the direction that the Dogs
doesn't need to be in the coaching staff.
No.
Speaking of great coaches, Craig Bellamy has re-signed with the Storm for 2023. How big is this for the Storm, Del?
Yeah, it's massive because I think Bell's he's at the crossroads where does he want to coach? Does he want to be a coaching director? You know, I think he's got a couple of grandkids now. You know, that was the train of thought. And some of the boys
go back to Brisbane and do that, right?
Yeah, Brisbane, but on the Gold Coast or something. I say family up there. And, mate, he's done so much in and around the game. But I just think, you know, the fire still burns in Bellamy. You know, when I had him in the Broncos and that, he taught me so much. And also, you know, he'd coach us when Wayne had rotated a bit and he was coaching us at stages. And I spoke to Steve Renoff about this last week in a function, you know, and it was great.
Well, with Bellamy being coached for 2023, will this impact Cam Munster's decision or not?
Yeah, it just depends. I think Brayton Astor's doing a real good job there with Munster.
He's putting hundreds of thousands of dollars every week.
He's playing the game well. Look, Munster loves Bellamy and vice versa, but obviously, you know, they were going to extend his contract, but then not obviously top him up. And, mate, when you're playing your career best football, mate, you want to be paid accordingly. So Bellamy's the secret there, but I think Brayton Astor is really sort of he's throwing a spanner in the works there.
He sure has. What about WA Bears? Could be an option. Sir Peter Volandis on the Bears options. He said every third person asks me, bring back the Bears. He said one thing I've learned in rugby league is the Bears have an extremely popular brand. There's already enough Sydney teams, but we do need to build up an area like Perth. We get the best of both worlds, a great brand and a new supporter base, as well as a lot of people who love the Bears watching them playing away when they're playing in Sydney.
Yeah, look.
What do you think?
That's an option, but I think Western Australia, they want their own team. They don't want a team to be relocated. But the Bears coming back, obviously, there's a bit of nostalgia there in the Bears. You know
the jersey.
The jersey, they want it back. I know for a fact, when I've been over there and done some stuff with WA Rugby League and that, mate, the old sponsor Cash Converters, they still want to get on board. They're still happy to sponsor.
They've got plenty.
A team there. Yeah, they've got plenty, but they still, there's a big supporter base in Western Australia. I went to the Pilbaras and up there a couple of years ago. Mate, there's some academies up there with the kids and that. And they love it. So I just don't know. And look, I'd like to see the Bears back, but
not there.
Will that appease the North Sydney fans?
Yeah, it's
like,
amazing.
Like, is it really their club if it's probably Bob, not Bob's up as the WA Bears?
But they are saying, you're right, but they are saying playing four home games at North Sydney Oval and all the home games and all the away games will be like home games for a lot of Bear fans. So they get big crowds and stuff. So I can see what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect world, right? So they're trying to fit sort of two things in together and it may or not work because we need that 18th team.
But in this day and age, you know, this could be a good fit, especially after being through COVID and whatever happened for the last two and a half years. So, you know, it might fit like a glove.
Coming up next, Swan star Dane Rampey joins us.
Driving home with three voices in your head. Gus, Jude and Wendell, the Triple M Rush Hour. The Rush
Hour. Welcome back to the Rush Hour with Gus, Jude and Wendell. We're talking AFL. We're talking to this man.
Our next guest was born on the mean streets of Clovelly back when you could get a sternly written letter just by looking at someone wrong. That tough upbringing readied him for a stellar AFL career as a hard man of the Sydney Swans. Playing almost 200 games, including All-Australian Team in 2016, Swans Best and Fairest 2019, and AFL's Most Courageous Player in 2020. He's co-captained along with...
Yes, Jude, I am mentioning that Bloods culture.
Jeez. Please welcome to the Rush Hour, Dane Rampey.
Yeah, Ramps, welcome to the Rush Hour. How are you, mate?
Mate, I'm good. As I said last time, really love that intro. It leaves me feeling really good about myself.
We put a bit of effort into it. It's all good, mate. But ahead of your 200th game, mate, at these sort of milestone moments, it's often a chance to reflect on your career. What's been those favourite achievements thus far that you look back on fondly?
It's a good question. With a big game on the weekend, you probably takes you like to later in the week to really reflect. But I think just hearing all the coaches speak and I guess players congratulating the lead up, you realise that you've built a lot of really close personal relationships. And hearing from past players, you know, I got a message from Ted Richards the other day and a few of those boys. And, you know, that's what kind of sticks out more so than any memory on the field. It's probably just the relationships you develop off it that you're really proud of and that you know are going to last with you for a lifetime. Mm. So I think that's what I'm most proud about so far.
Hey, Rams, when you're younger, how do you know that you've got, you know, the X factor or, you know, you've got that next level to make it, you know, at AFL level? When did you know that?
Oh, mate, well, that's another good question. I think I had a bit of a different, like, upbringing in terms of the way I made it. I was playing in the VFL for about 4 or 5 years and got repeatedly knocked back. But okay. I think I was always confident that, should I get the opportunity, I'd be able to grab it with both hands. And there were times, absolutely, you know, after being knocked back in the drafts each year, you know, you did kind of second guess yourself and question whether you would get this opportunity. And you're probably trying to justify to your parents and your friends, you know, what the hell are you doing down in Melbourne trying to make it? And, you know, everyone else is moving on with their lives. But, yeah, so you definitely have doubts along the way. But I think what I'm most proud of is probably just that opportunity that I knew if I did get one, I'd be able to grab it with both hands because I was confident in the work I'd put in. And I guess my mindset, which is what I think holds me in good stead compared to some of the other players in the competition.
Yeah, and rightly so. You've been doing that beautifully, mate. 200 games on the weekend. Callan Mills joined you as the co-captain this year. Hasn't his game gone to another level?
No, oh, mate, he's he's really taken the captaincy with you know, in full swing, and he's one of those blokes. I mean, Jude, you know as well, just from his early days being around the club, he's just one of those players that once he walked in, you could just tell he was almost destined for a role like this, and I think it speaks a lot about his character that he seems to have thrived in his first year as captain. You know, I can imagine I went through it myself and you've got all these different thoughts in your first year as captain. What do you change? But I think what we've been really lucky with at the club is a great set of leaders that have come before us and kind of reiterated to you that you don't need to change anything. You're voted in for a reason and that you're doing what you're doing and that's enough. And I think Millsy's really taken that on board, but he seemed to find an extra gear as well, which is pretty impressive.
Now, the Swans turned in a really good performance against Essendon, who, let's just say, they're in a bit of turmoil at the moment.
Yeah, but, they're rotten, mate.
But,
that's what they are.
How are you looking to build on that form against Carlton on Friday night?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, obviously Essendon is struggling a little bit at the moment, but what we were proud about is just the way we came out and controlled what we could. Yes, their pressure was probably not as great as what it could have been, but again, our messaging to the boys has just been control what we can, and we've been really focusing on our starts of late. You know, we've probably been relying on our ability to run our games a bit better than oppositions in the last couple of weeks, and against Brisbane and then even Gold Coast 2 weeks ago, we probably relied on that too much to the point where we opened up too much of a gap at the start of the game. So the pleasing thing from our point of view was we came out and we delivered early on against Essendon, and then it was probably catch up for them for the rest of the game, and we put them on the back foot.
We've spoken to a few of the Swannies since that big moment with Buddy and the 1,000th goal. For you, big fella, what was it like knowing that it was happening, just to get out of the way or in the way, or where did you want to go?
I wanted to get to Bard, but I mean, I'm sure you would have seen from the vision. There were 1,000 fans there before I could even get there. So, yeah. which is credit to the punters that were keen to get out there.
Yeah.
But it was, mate, it was a surreal experience. It really was. It was the funny thing was, it was the end of the game. There was probably only about 5 minutes left, so we were already pretty physically spent. And then you obviously the sheer elation, and you know you're carrying on for about 5 minutes, like in a mosh pit, and then you kind of take a deep breath, and you know you just go, I've got nothing left here, and you kind of get a little bit dizzy, and you're like, Jesus, all right, where to now? And made the mistake of looking up at the sea of people. I had to wade through to get back to the change rooms, and you know that rattled me a little bit, but I think it was all in good fun. And you know, I think the good thing about, I guess, Barton and the rest of the players was everyone really enjoyed the moment for what it was, and same with the crowd as well. I think it was one of those things in reflection you probably look at and think, like, far out, the AFL got away with one in terms of, I guess, not having security there. But credit to the crowd and the public for just being in such good spirits. There wasn't any malice in with any players or.
And he embraced it as well.
He embraced the whole thing. He understood
it. Absolutely. I think that was, I guess, what I admire most about him was just his ability to kind of, it seems to be the way he is, you know, with the way he plays as well, just kind of embrace the moment and not shy away from it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And congratulations, 200 coming up, and really appreciate you joining us on the show this afternoon. All the best with your preparation in the lead up.
No, thanks, girls. Appreciate your time. And
cheers, Rand.
That's it for today's podcast. For more of the show, you can catch us live on the radio tomorrow from 4 p.m. on Triple M.